Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on YouTube. We're live on Twitch, Facebook, X/Twitter, whatever we're calling it these days. Live on Instagram as well. Maybe you're listening later on Spotify or Stitcher or Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts. It's all good. We love it. And Justin, our third co-host, is on set at the moment, so maybe he will pop in later. I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, he's busy.
He is busy. But we're also very busy. We have a ton
of guests, so many
for you
guests
tonight.
A plethora.
So many guests. A plethora. You really got a word of the day calendar. I'm 100% sure of that. All right, why don't we jump into it? We have our first guest here. They're the team from one of our current favorite running comic books, New Superhero Universes. They are kicking off the sequel to it that is coming out tomorrow, Minor Threats. Ladies and gentlemen, Jordan Bloom, Scott Hepburn, and Patton Oswalt.
Hey,
hello.
Welcome, hey. Hi, everybody.
Oh, my gosh. Welcome. So excited to have you guys here. We love Minor Threats. And as I mentioned, first miniseries came out a while ago. The Alternates, sort of a sidequel, I guess we'll call it, came out and was great as well. And now we have Minor Threats 2, the official sequel. I want to take a big step back, though, because the thing that we talked about a lot when we've reviewed the issues on our Stack podcast is how high a level difficulty it is to create a original superhero universe. And I think you guys have hurdled over that difficulty. But when you sat down to do this, where did you start? Like, because a lot of people start with an amalgam of other universes, or, oh, it's DC, but kind of not. It's Marvel or kind of not. But this is very much its own thing.
Well, weirdly enough, this started as a Joker story that I was going to pitch to DC, but I had done work for the majors, and I was kind of at this point where I was like, you do so much work and you don't own anything. Like, what am I doing this for? So I got together with Jordan and we started building the universe off of the story, first by figuring out what would be really good avatars for certain characters that I was originally going to work with. And then what is this world's different history, background, just sort of overall feel. And so once that started going, and I'm not trying to brag, but it wasn't that difficult creating a universe, because it was so fun, because it's ours. It's all ours. I loved it.
Yeah, I think we're definitely doing, certain plays on types of characters. Obviously, the first book was very much these kind of holdovers from the Silver Age, Bronze Age. So I think it was more, it wasn't like a one for one as much as like the feel of this era and what these characters would look like being dragged into this more modern era. And, Scott, obviously, with the costumes and stuff, really brought them to life that way. But I will say there was some difficulty. I remember, as you were saying that, Patton, we were trying to figure out the stick man. And I think we went to 300 characters and gimmicks and stuff before landing on that. And then Scott's design was like, that's it. That's the one. So sometimes it could be tricky.
So cool.
The ones came
quickly. Yeah.
Well, but you've got the central character at the same time, Playtime, who the first series revolves around, and the second series, without getting into spoilers, revolves around as well, or at least based on what I've read, revolves around. I guess we'll see what happens to her long term. Why was she the right character to build everything around?
I just think it what makes her really fun is that she is so conflicted between, out of all of the other characters. Yes, she's a D-list who rises to A-list and then realizes, oh, there's a pull to the D-list. There's a gravity and inertia to being more street level, and watching somebody struggle with that was just a ton of fun. And then struggling with that within a supervillain context was even more fun. Imagine having that inner struggle and you also have superpowers. What does that look like?
Yeah, we love the idea of a character sort of born into this world. You know, her mother is a supervillain. She was a sidekick. Yeah. She's come up in it and she's trying to reject it. But at the same time, it's the thing she knows. It's what she's best at. We thought just from a character point of view, that's a cool place to start someone.
Yeah. And I just take a little side trip and then we'll get back to the interview before I forget. Every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans. His name's Brett Macris. He runs a restaurant called Wild South that just opened. He either curates or designs a cocktail for this, and we don't tell him what to do. He just kind of does it. And this week he came up with one based on playtime, the watered down.
Oh, my God. Take a picture of this so yes. I can get it later.
Yeah. I can email it to you as well. Oh, but you. Yeah. There, yeah,
also,
for sure.
Tell him to spell my name right.
Yes. He does have a little bit of a spelling problem. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Oh, my.
Wait
a minute. Ryan, I love that. Yeah. Any kind of rye or whiskey with ginger beer, boom. That's the perfect base.
Excellent. Well, cool. Nice. I will get this by you guys. This cocktail sounds great. I did not make it because I didn't have any ginger beer, but I'm very much looking forward to this one. Oh, watered down rail booze by Playtime. There you go. So Scott, then over to you, away from the cocktail, back to the book for a second. The other thing that I really love about this book beyond the characters is just like, it has, and I say this complimentary, like this grody feel to the world. Sure. Like it feels a little 70s-ish, early 80s. What were you going for there? What were you inspired by for the feel?
Well, I think what we all had in mind once we realized that the book was really about a place and time, we wanted everything to feel lived in rather than brand new. None of this isn't some new phenomenon. It's not like the mutant gene just woke up and now suddenly the Earth is different. This is how our world has been for a while. It's like you're just sort of stepping into something that for the last 60, 80, 100 years, this is just these people's lives. And this neighborhood has been dealing with a lot of fallout from this kind of stuff for a while. So there's, you know, weird crater pockmarks on things. There's gaps on buildings from some mystical sorcerer event that never got cleaned off. There's like giant decaying plants from some, you know, infestation that was dealt with, but you know, this neighborhood doesn't have as much resources to clean everything up. So we just try it, like, or at least I try and think of everything like it's been there for a bit and no one's that surprised anymore. They're dealing with it. It's a problem, but it's not like it's not some like overwhelming new reality. It's just day-to-day living in Redport, you know.
We can say objectively that there are things that Scott has put in the background or on the margins simply for aesthetic purposes. I mean, his eye is amazing, and those background and margin stuff have spawned other writers to pitch us stories based mm-hmm. on throwaway visual stuff in the background. And so watching the universe build that way has been incredible.
Yeah. And I mean, this is I do want to talk about this a little later after we talk about Minor Threats too, but you have a couple of things that have been announced. You have Barfly with Kyle Starks and Ryan Brown is coming out on July 10th. That's such an awesome team. I'm so excited about that. And you got Gail Simone this past weekend, I think, announced she's doing a Crab Louie title.
Oh, great. We announced that.
Great.
She did.
She did. And she teased there's going to be an A-list artist on it, which you can reveal here, right? Like, you can just tell us.
I don't know if the contract's
signed. Yeah. You know what? I would love to blab it, but based on my experience in this business, I wait till everything is 100% sure before you say anything.
Smart.
Or you just get people going, wait a minute, didn't you say that? Yes, I know, but then everything went, argh! So yeah. I've just learned not to do that.
We'll say Frank Miller is doing it later. We'll save that.
Right. You know what? Frank Miller's doing a whole line within the Minor Threat. Yes.
Major Threat.
And McFarlane is doing all the action figures. You can say it. I mean, wow. It's not, it'll probably happen. We don't know.
Well, let's jump back to Minor Threats 2, though, because that is the thing that's coming out tomorrow. Without spoilers about the first issue, I thought it was awesome. A very worthy sequel. Can you, for anybody who might be jumping in with this miniseries, though I really think you should probably read the first one at the very least, what can people expect? What's the pitch for Minor Threats 2?
If you've never read a Minor Threats title and you jump in here, you are basically seeing... This actually be a really unique crime movie now that I think about it. Pretend it's a crime movie. The movie starts with clearly somebody who was on the bottom rung has just made it to the top rung and is waiting for all the rewards and then realizes, oh no, this is actually 10 times more work than when I was on the bottom rung, and hits the ground running and has got to start struggling to defend her empire. Ooh. Wow, that's actually, you know what? If you've read the volume one of Minor Threats, I'm really happy and I think you'll like this. But if you haven't, this is actually even a cooler reading experience now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got, I don't know if we can talk about this, but you've got a character who's either like cover who's standing to the left, who's sort of like your eye on the ground character who is giving you all the information you need to know, which I did appreciate. Like it brings you into the book very nicely.
Yeah. I mean, that came out of Frankie was this character you could identify with. I think in the first one, she was clearly this protagonist, very relatable, and now she's elevated. So we wanted to kind of pick up the status quo by having a different character who's at now the ground floor talk about her and tell you about who she is through his eyes. You know, we were really inspired by kind of the opening of Goodfellas, where you're hearing what a local kid, you know, how a kid feels about these gangsters and how he sees them as these successes and these people who are respected. So we're trying to kind of channel that into Backdrop, who's this new character who works for Frankie.
Yeah.
Well, he's also the supervillain equivalent of like the Al Neary, who's just the guy who's always just kind of in the background lurking. And you're not quite, I mean, in a way, I feel like Frankie almost keeps him around for slightly for intimidation purposes, like why is he always there? What is his story? But you get to hear it from his point of view, which is even cooler.
Look at this Scott page, by the way. My mind blown when I see Scott's art. This is unbelievable.
That's a day in Frankie's life.
Yeah, for anybody listening on the podcast, it's a awesome 2-page spread that's sort of broken up by a clock, like Patton said, showing a day in the life. It's great. I mean, Scott, for you, jumping back into this world with this, did you feel more comfortable with these characters? Were there things, I mean, you're clearly pushing stuff on pages like this, but what were you trying to push yourself in any way? What was different artistically tackling the sequel versus the original?
Well, you definitely want to keep the momentum of everything, the world building and the character growth. And I like to treat we've only had a couple installments so far, but I like to keep the character designs evolving forward as well. I feel like this is a world that, like, if it was like the Marvel bullpen in the 60s or whatever, other artists would have drawn these characters and made little tweaks on the costume, and like different stories would have pushed design changes. So I try and treat everything like it's in flux and like constantly moving forward. So there's never going to be exactly the same costume on each character for their stories. It'll always be like evolved somewhat, but I also just try and keep the like amount of world building and background sort of development in mind as I go. The guys give me some really fun. We do a story that is definitely a comic book. Like we do, you know, page layouts that are kind of only this medium can tell these sort of story beats, which I really love.
I want to ask you, just because we're on this page and I always find this interesting, how do you draw a really good kissing scene? Because I think this is a good kissing scene.
It's a great kissing scene. Yeah.
They're hard to do. Like they look wrong on the comic book page most of the time.
Yeah, it's tricky. The way that the noses are overlapping and the mouths are the alternate overlapping, the heads have to be tilted the opposite angle. It can get, when done wrong, it looks really wrong. I don't know that I'm an expert exactly, but my only suggestion is take a little more time than you think to plan out those pencils.
Do you use smooch models?
Look how he, not only did he nail the kiss, he nailed the aftermath. Look at panel two.
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean, just the whole thing, head it's down. A full effect.
Yeah. Ugh.
Good. I didn't cut you off. I'm sorry about that.
No, it was not a good joke. Thank you for coming. just to get back to the expanding world, though, at this point, and this is not asking for spoilers, I'm just curious. You had the first minor threats. It was I want to say surprise hit. That's not exactly fair because, like, you're a bunch of names, so people knew that it was probably going to do well or hoped it was going to do well, but I feel like it definitely went beyond that. Like, it took on a life of its own in terms of how passionate people are with these characters. So at what point did you start expanding the universe, and how expansive can it potentially get?
Well, my imposter syndrome thanks you for that. I feel like for us, you know, obviously we have our ideas of what we want to do, and we're going to keep the main book going and Frankie's story. But, you know, the alternates was Tim Seeley bringing in a pitch, and other mm-hmm. people brought in stuff that was their own thing. And we developed that one. They all come in different forms. But for us, you know, the only mandate is show me a superhero story I've never seen. Show me a perspective I've never seen. Tell me something different, because we are huge superhero fans. We've read everything. And I feel like the genre has so much life, you just have to kind of look in different places. And so that's always been the only mandate. And we'll figure out how it works into the universe. And, you know, but we don't have this, like, in issue 400, the searcher must do that. You know, like, that's not planned out. And I think, Patton, you said it once, we only really think arc to arc. We write as if this is the only movie that's ever existed.
Yes.
It ends here. And then I love being written into a corner. Like, I think we talked about,
yes,
expect the heel turn we got it with Frankie at the end of volume one. And that felt like an ending to that story, but it also created a new kind of chessboard, you know, in Twilight City, of her being in control and all these things. And it kind of flipped the switch. So we're always just kind of, I don't know, open to where the characters tell us where to go and all of that.
If the characters surprise you, then they'll surprise the audience. And I think that that's really, really crucial. And that, and, you know, also, like, yeah, boy, can you tell when you watch a movie and you can tell that they were thinking, oh, we're starting a franchise, and they pull their punches because they want something. You're like, no, leave it all out there. Like Jordan said, leave it where you've written yourself in the corner. How the hell do you do a sequel to this? And then figure that out. Mm-hmm. That's what's amazing.
One write every comic is, like no one will ever let you write a comic again, was what we said with Meyer.
Deep. Yes, exactly. Deep.
I mean, I love that. And I think maybe that, I mean, I think that does explain the reason that personally I sparked to the series so much, is because something like the alternates completely flips the premise of who you think these characters are by the end in such a gutting way. Or going into this, like I was mentioning at the beginning, given we don't know what's going to happen to Frankie going forward, she's the main character, maybe she doesn't make it out of that. And that's something that I think you don't get a lot or at all in comics, really.
So, yeah. Yeah. No one is safe thing is it's hard to do when it's like, well, this person has three movies coming out and a video game tie in. And yeah, it's harder to mess with Spider-Man, you know, like that.
I just wanted to take a moment and thank you all, because this has been an awesome world to kind of get to live in and have some fun. And so thank you for all the work that went into this. It's really been awesome to be a fan of it. Jordan, something I wanted to jump back that you said, Tim Seeley, every time we've talked to him, has been a blast. How great is it to get to work with Tim Seeley?
He's a fucking monster. Yeah. No, he's the absolute best. He came in and was like, I want to do the Vertigo characters of this universe. I want to know what it's like to be rebooted into an adult series, like a Swamp Thing or Animal, all those early Vertigo books, and then be brought back to the DC universe, be brought back to a regular two-dimensional superhero world. And I was like, psychologically, that's insane to go through that. And that was the pitch, you know, and we built it out from there. And Scott got to do some really cool designs and covers for that. And we had a blast with him.
Yeah, I love that he brought us ideas that made us go, Yeah. Oh my God, that's so perfect. Yeah. He's so good that it you overlook like what a Trump supporter he is. That's the level that you can actually. Very few people have that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And Gail Simone are the only two that are so good that you forget all the.
That's really weird that you picked both of them.
They picked us.
Oh.
Right. But Scott, do you want to talk about, because Tim's also an artist, so he did the modern versions, and then you played off that, and he wanted you to do the they're like Silver Age versions, right?
Yeah, like he had his own. I mean, he came in with a full pitch on that, with like the character lineup and everything, which is great. And then I sort of like stuck my thumb in a little bit to get to play around with them and do kind of the pre-transformation. Like his characters were the ones that are living in the reality now in their sort of mopey 90s state. And I sort of went in and did the like what their pre-event superhero aesthetics would have been. They're sort of more traditional, you know, costumes and simpler sort of Silver Age-y designs, which was a lot of fun. And looking back, at some of the like what the Sandman looked like in the DC universe before Neil Gaiman, stuff like that was really fun to like, and like kind of broke some of my like what I thought I knew about comic book design, character design stuff. It was a really cool place to put my brain, you know.
Awesome.
That is
how
awesome.
Good are his flashback pages, where not only does he get obviously it has a lot to do also with Ian Herring. You know, the coloring and the Zippitone feel, but he even changes the framing, the way it's like the way old movies used to be shot. The comic books used to be framed, and literally like the cinematography was different. It wasn't the crazy angles we have now. It was very much a grid, and here comes people, you know, you maybe get one action panel, and he absolutely captured that. I mean, that was really thrilling to me to see, like, oh, that's right. Comics weren't, even though they were great, they were not as dynamic as we have them now. We don't realize how good we have it. It was amazing.
That's awesome. Cool. Jordan, I have a question for you, just because you mentioned this online. I'm sure you can't tease anything about this as well, but you said there might be some gaming news coming about Minor Threats tomorrow. Anything you can tease about that?
Check in tomorrow. I'll say this. I'll just say this. My son is over the moon with this. He is 10. So that's all I could say.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Doom? Duke Nukem? What are kids like?
Oh, man, dude. You're way off.
Yeah. They love Galaga.
Yeah. Really? Pac-Man.
Excellent. I have a quick question for you, Patton, slightly off this. I would be remiss not to ask. Any news on when we're going to see Pip the Troll back?
I will be the last to know. I'm one of those guys that you hire him for the movie, and then if anything happens sequel-wise, you let him know a week before shooting. So I have no idea. I have no idea. I'll be as surprised as you are.
Excellent. I can't wait to be surprised. Just getting back to Minor Threats 2 then, before we let you guys go, we talked a little bit about the first issue. What can you tease around the rest of the series that people might expect as they check it out, as it comes out?
You're going to meet the Action, who is our world's kind of version of the Teen Titans, the young sidekicks, who aren't buying Frankie's lie about what happened to the Insomniacs. So they're coming to Redport to do their own investigation, which kind of threatens her entire empire. I know people were kind of upset, as was I, that we didn't get a chance to kind of learn more about Snake Stalker in the first volume. So his presence will be felt, I'll say that, in the series. And we saw a little bit of it, but there is an unexpected relationship where Frankie and another character will learn maybe not to mix business with pleasure.
Awesome. I just want to say, just because you reminded me without spoiling what it is, Scott, the last panel is great in the first issue here.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So good.
Yep.
Got me very jazzed. Guys, congratulations on everything. This is awesome. I cannot wait to see how this world continues to expand.
Thank you. Guys, thanks for having us on.
Yes.
Thanks for coming. Have a good night, guys.
Take care.
Good night.
All right, there we go. That was Patton Oswalt, Jordan Bloom, and Scott Hepburn. You can check out Minor Threats to the Fastest Way Down.
Oh, man, you got to check it out.
Coming out tomorrow from Dark Horse Comics. It's awesome, for real.
We'll probably talk about it on the snack, right?
We probably will. Let's see how we... Wouldn't it be funny if we reviewed it tomorrow? We're like, this stinks bad.
Oh, come on. No.
It's really good. I'll say it's really good.
Yeah.
So definitely check it out. We have a lot more guests who have been very patient. I do want to bring in our next one because he is all the way across the pond. He's also one of our favorite writers. We love the stuff he has. And he right now is working on a Kickstarter that is also coming out from Oni Press, Cult of the Lamb. Ladies and gentlemen, Alex Pachnidal. Alex, welcome to the show. Hello.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you for your patience, particularly because it's now very late your time, 12:30 or something like that.
I mean, I was saying before I kind of came into the room, I apologize if I'm sort of keeping it down a bit, but I've got an 8-year-old sleeping right above me. Ooh, so it's indoor voice. Sorry.
Yes, I have I have a 9-year-old that hopefully is going to bed, but I guess we'll see what happens. It's a little bit of a crapshoot every Tuesday, you know. Alex, you've done a lot of stuff that we've really, really loved and we've talked about on our review show and our live show as well. This is such an interesting project, though, because it is a adaptation of a video game that is being published by Oni Press, but it's also going to take Kickstarter. Can you explain kind of the genesis of how this is tentacling out? I don't know, words.
There's a game called Cult of the Lamb that has an absolutely fascinating premise. I mean, that was what engaged me. I'm not a gamer, really. Okay. I apologize, but I'm not really a gamer. But the premise was so strong that was what kind of drew me in. And it's a roguelike game that kind of auto-generates its own kind of maps and everything, which is kind of crazy. I don't really know how that works, but it's impressive. The game itself was so ridiculously successful I think Oni saw scope for expanding the lore, not just in terms of, you know, a complementary graphic novel, but a kind of a graphic novel that would basically provide a lot of missing context. So within the game Cult of the Lamb, you are a lamb, the last of its kind, that's been sacrificed by the old faith, which is this sort of hoary old religion that sort of rules this dystopian world with an iron fist, and you are brought back to life by a mysterious being in the underworld called the One Who Waits, and he charges you, or they charge you, I apologize, they charge you with starting a cult in their name, and you basically wander around these environments hacking various heretics to pieces recruiting them into your cult. It's all clean, wholesome family.
Sounds fun. Amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
It just sounds so delightful.
Yeah, well, as you can see, it's good. It's this weirdly incongruous kind of cutesy aesthetic that just...
Yeah, really, it's a nice mixing. Yes, yeah, exactly. It's really done well. The balance of the violence with the cuteness really brings it to a nice level.
Well, and yeah, it really ties the room together.
Yeah!
And I think it ties nicely with a lot of the other stuff you've done, or at least I'm thinking about offhand, like Red Goblin, for example, is a kid inside of a Goblin Carnage suit. You've got All Against All, which same sort of thing. You have these like cute little squiddy aliens that are, I mean, kind of cute, who are doing absolutely horrific things at the same time. What is it that draws you to that, mixing up the cute and the horrific?
I really enjoy playing with tones. I do enjoy in terms of sort of like yoking inharmonious things together, things that shouldn't belong. I mean, like my favorite movie, bar none, is The Fly. So, I mean, I guess that tells you everything you need to know.
Say a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, it feels, don't get me wrong. You know, I mean, I had a long discussion with a friend about this the other day, you know, about the difference between sort of, breaking genre barriers and pushing genre barriers, and that pushing them is actually more ambitious. Like, you know, anything can be broken, right? That's an act of destruction is fairly kind of commonplace. But if you can push sort of genre boundaries as far as they'll go without actually pushing anything over, that requires skill. And I think that's the thing that I'm always interested in. And I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't say I'm always successful, but I always like to try. And I think the appeal of Cull the Lamb, I think, was, you know, the groundwork had already been done for me. So I already knew it was going to work. But it was interesting when I started scripting, you know, because I'm filling in a lot of the blanks, right, story-wise. Because in the game, the lamb doesn't really have a voice, doesn't really have, you know, there's no narration there. So I'm, you know, I was basically given a free pass to kind of provide that. And initially, I was kind of trying to feel out the vibe. And it was quite an interesting process because I was going to the game developer, Devolver, and I was kind of saying, okay, well, you know, I've written this kind of comedy scene, and they were going, oh no, play it straight. You know, the cuteness will do the heavy lifting for you, but you just go, you go as dark as you want, but the aesthetics will kind of carry it over, which had never occurred to me, right? But
a little scary though, that you're like allowed to go darker because the cuteness will save you? You know what I mean? Are you worried too much about what the darkness is doing to you?
Ow!
I was born in it. no, sorry, he's supposed to cut your hands off. No, not really. I mean, I'll be honest. It was a relief. I mean, in as much as, because here's the thing, right? Comedy's hard.
Yeah,
really, really hard. So, you know, when I was told that I didn't necessarily have to write a kind of litany of jokes, I was kind of relieved, honestly. But, okay, well, yeah, you know, drama. I'm very comfortable in. I mean, you know, a miserable story. Yeah, I'm in my element, right? But yeah, you know, if I have to do gags, I mean, you know, the guests you just had on, I mean, that's the really, like, that's the sharp end.
Well, I want to talk, you touched on this a little bit before, but I wanted to talk about the Kickstarter since that's going now. So it is doing great, first of all. So
yeah, congratulations.
I don't know what I'm going to do with all that money. I was thinking of getting like a solid...
More money, more problems.
Of my face, but that's always smiling. But for when I'm miserable, like I'm just wearing this pendant of my face and it's smiling, so it just kind of does, you know.
Wow.
It's like, there I am, I'm happy.
So for anybody who's listening, just so you got the numbers in front of you, with 9 days to go, there are over 7,000 backers. You were looking for $10,000. You have now over $534,000 as of this recording.
So giant gold necklace is exactly what you should do with all that.
Extra money. Like, I think we might hit the goal. I think if we all just believe.
Could you imagine if you didn't? That would be awesome.
on the basis of this interview.
Oh my God. We're like, you know what? I'm out. You know what? I'm good. Thanks.
I expected gags.
So what, here's my question, and we've talked about this a bunch of times with a bunch of different creators on the show. You know, obviously I think we actually talked about this last week a little bit, because like the whole idea of a company like Oni Press also having a Kickstarter at the same time, when it popped up a couple of years ago, seemed very antithetical. Clearly it's part and parcel with the comic book industry now, but what does this mean that Oni Press now has $500,000 towards the Cult of the Lamb thing and is also releasing the comic book issue by issue in stores?
It seems like they're starting a cult with this money.
Potentially.
No. To be in all candor, I mean, I wasn't part of that decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was approached... New York Comic Con last year. And I mean, I was sold on the kind of concept alone. Yeah. I mean, I just figure, I mean, with something like this, I think it just gives them it's about creating more options, right? It's about, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there are fans of the game who might not necessarily, let's be honest, might never set foot in a comic book store. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the sort of benefits of the sort of Kickstarter platform is that it's also frankly like it's a marketing platform as well, mm-hmm. right? It does a lot of kind of PR for you. Oh
yeah, definitely.
And so, you know, obviously, you know, ultimately in an ideal world, you know, the thing we want to do is we want to drive as much footfall into comic book stores as we possibly can. They're our bread and butter. They are our biggest champions and our strongest advocates. But there are going to be plenty of people, plenty of people who this will be their kind of sole exposure to the comic book. And it's just a way of kind of getting it into their hands. And also kind of giving them, frankly, some kind of pretty kind of awesome sort of stretch goals. And I think they get like unique covers as well. So it does have that sort of added value kind of component. But sure, I mean, when the time comes, you know, I'm not going to be kind of going to people's houses and signing these. I'm going to be going to kind of comic book stores because, mm-hmm. you know, they're the people who keep the roof over my head, you know.
Yeah,
that'd be kind of terrible if they use the $500,000 to make you walk door to door signing people's copies. So I'm glad to hear that's not happening.
I mean, I do it within like a limited radius, you know. Oh, what I mean? Sure. I'm prepared to put in like a little bit of legwork. Like,
That's nice of you. I also think something you should consider is maybe they're not fans of the games. They just love lambs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. They love lamb. Sorry, yeah. I had to.
Well, it's very exciting, and it is for anybody who's listening who's not doing the Kickstarter. Like we said, it's going to be issue by issue in comic book stores as well pretty soon. I should have written down the date. June 5th, the first issue is coming out from OD Press.
By the way, I will say, like, Troy Little, who's providing the art for this. This is not a pitch. It's not a bit. I normally write quite detailed scripts, right? Because I don't know who I'm going to be working with. So I try to be quite prescriptive, which isn't necessarily how a lot of people like to work, but it's just, you know, so I can ensure that what's in here is kind of there. And in issue two, I ripped it all out because Troy's, the one thing that I didn't want to see with this was kind of almost like cut scenes from the game on the page. Mm-hmm. But what Troy is doing with this, the storytelling is just exquisite. I've never seen anything like it. It's just, I can't wait to take credit for it. You know, just, yeah, great. Yeah, that composition there, just, that was
for me. Well, it is a great looking book. Real quick, I did want to ask you about All Against All, because that is one of my absolute favorite books that's come out.
That's probably the book I'm proudest of. So mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, the thing that I wanted to ask you about was the structure of it. And this might mean absolutely nothing to anybody who hasn't read the book, but what I was so impressed by was the way that you thrust us in the middle of this sci-fi scenario and then very slowly and carefully provided answers over the course of the book. And in full candor, since we're being honest with each other, we're both Alex's here.
Alex sandwich right now.
The first issue I read and I was like, oh, Casper Wingard, the art's great. I like Alex Bechdel. I'm reading this, but I do not understand exactly what's going on here. There's a wild boy. There's some creatures. There's other creatures. I'm intrigued, but I don't know what's happening. And every subsequent issue, I loved it and got obsessed with it more and more. And I do think that really is down to almost this antithetical mystery structure that you have. And what I mean by that is, like, a lot of comics we read is concept, concept, concept. Here's the kicker at the end. We finally revealed what the concept is at the end of the first issue. Tune in for second issue when we hit the ground running. But you took your time over the course of it. What am I wrong about that structure? I mean, what led to the decision to hit the book that way?
Instinct, genuinely. I mean, I'm in a writing group with Ryan O'Sullivan, Dan Waters, and Ram V. We're all very, very close friends, and we all sort of share scripts and everything. And I had a lot of discussions with Ram and Dan, particularly at the beginning, where, you know, they basically said to me, you know, if you want it to be You know, if you want, and by the way, this is not, I'm not saying this out of any kind of hauteur or sort of sense of like, you know, artiste, you know, but there's something, you know, if you want it to, if you want it to be, a, you know, the more commercial version of it, you stick with the human protagonist and you basically see everything from their perspective. And I had a long discussion with Casper about this and I was saying, you know what, like, I just love this idea of a real kind of catty corner perspective where you're introduced to the aliens and you're basically just carried on with you're carried along with their physical logic. You know, they don't understand why anything would have one body. Like, why would you do that? That doesn't make any sense. Why would you have a spinal column? That's ridiculous. you know, those kind of things. And just that the idea, and in order to do that, I think you can't do that in a kind of eruptive way. You have to kind of drip feed it. And it was just that sort of discussion of, you know, well, it just felt right to do it from the kind of alien perspective. But yeah, I mean, as you say, the trade-off there is that, you know, you don't necessarily have to do that thing. I mean, I had a long discussion with Kieran Gillen about it as well. And Kieran was kind of saying, okay, well, like, really, you know, the end of your first issue, you want to kind of undermine the premise that you've already established because that brings people back for more and everything. And I was going running through it all in my head. And again, not, I knew that I was making probably a commercial trade-off with these decisions, but it just didn't feel right any other way, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I mean, I think, you know, in a trade, I mean, I hope, it works, right?
Yeah. Yes, it does. I mean, yeah. Just to be more specific about what I'm saying, like, and I, this is without calling out any particular comic books, I feel often you read a really strong first issue and then everything else is just kind of even or goes downwards as it goes once you get past that initial concept. This went in the opposite direction completely for me, where I went from being like, this is good and I like this and I know this is good. I'm not quite sure what's going on, like I said, but it just got getting better and better until I was completely emotionally involved with these alien characters by the end. It's phenomenal. So great job. You did it.
I really appreciate that. Thank you. Sorry. No, that, you have no idea what that means to me, genuinely. Oh. Like, it was a complete labor of love. I adore that book.
It's great. And I'm definitely looking forward to more to come as well as can't wait to check out Cult of the Lamb. Before we let you go, real quick, anything else you want to plug? Or is this the main things right now?
There's plenty on, and I'm pretty sure I can't talk about any of it. It's going to be really cool.
Awesome. I can't wait.
Can't wait.
I always stick by a fellow Alex. So thank you, Alex.
Thank you for finally having me on. This is a real thrill. Genuinely.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Oh, have a great night.
Yeah. Take care.
Cheers.
All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called Cult of the Lamb. It's on Kickstarter now, or you can pick it up June 5th from Oni Press. It is very exciting and I can't read it. It looks gross and hilarious.
Glorious and fun. Yeah.
And we have two last guests for you in the evening who've been very patient and we much appreciate it. They are here to talk about the new Vivi, I'm probably mispronouncing that and they could yell at me in a second, comics platform. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Crothers and David Yu.
Dan, David. Hey, welcome. Hello, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your patience. We much appreciate it. Did I mispronounce?
You actually pronounced it perfectly. Most people say V, so thank you.
I was wondering if maybe it was the French who was Veve as well. It could be that.
You ruined it. You ruined it. You did good, and then
I know,
you
and then I and then I pulled it back.
And then you kept talking.
Guys, really interested and excited to chat about this. Just for anybody listening who doesn't have the context here, Vivi has been around for a while, I think since 2018, if I remember correctly. But at South by Southwest, a couple of months ago now, or last month, time has no meaning, Marvel was doing a panel. A lot of the focus from the comics community was on their announcement to their X-Men titles, but also there, you guys were there to talk about a new platform that you were launching with Marvel, which is Vivi Comics, which is a comics reader, it's a comics store online, and it's also a way of collectible comics as well, specifically through covers, something that you know well from your digital collectibles. just to start off, that's the basis for anybody who doesn't know what it is. And if I got any details wrong, please let me know. But how did this start? Like, I know you've worked with Marvel before, but how did it go from digital collectibles, with Marvel to we're going to launch comics you can read on the platform?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, yeah, we've been around since 2018. You know, both Dave and I are avid collectors. David, I like to refer to as a level 9,000 collector because he's got the shoes, as you can see.
It's over 9,000.
Exactly. And, you know, when the, you know, the whole digital collectible thing came out in 2017, we were exploring options in that space. And we thought, you know, if we could somehow bring, you know, world-leading IP that people already love to collect into this new digital world, it could potentially be something, you know, very exciting. You know, so many industries have transitioned and, you know, have counterparts in the digital world, you know, like obviously we've got Netflix now, you know, Spotify, you know, even dating, everything is all online now. So it's kind of a natural thing that, you know, our industry and many other industries are going to sort of move into this space. And so, yeah, we started off doing collectibles for majority of your favorite IPs out there. I mean, everything from Lamborghini to Marvel to James Bond, you know, we've got it all. Basically everything that David loves, really, is what he signs up. And it's been really, really successful. And probably about, I think, 2 years into the app launch, we started doing backlist digital comics with Marvel. Now, these can all be read through the app. You can read them in augmented reality, which is kind of cool. You know, sitting in your bed, I've got my, like, you know, 2-meter comic sitting in front of me. And like I say, that's all backlist comics. And so, you know, we got so much traction through those comics. In fact, I think we sold like 4 million comic editions in the space of a couple of years. So the uptake was really big with these backlists. And, you know, sometimes this is the only way people can actually get their hands on a Marvel number one, you know, Uncanny X-Men, because, you know, who's going to take it out of the slab to read it? You know, no one. as the relationship developed with them, you know, we just started to realize that, you know, there is a big opportunity with the frontlist comics, same day as they come out in print. And obviously there's been a bit of a hole in the market since, you know, the collapse of Comixology, et cetera. And that's kind of brought us up to today. So South by Southwest, we were announcing the new VV comics, which is basically all frontlist.
Well, let's talk about the Comixology thing a little bit. As you mentioned, there was a very clear and very public collapse, I think, is a generous way of putting it. A lot of people are very upset about it. I certainly use it a lot, and it still doesn't exist in some fashion. There's also, at the same time, there's Marvel Unlimited, which is another place where you can read comics. So what's different about this? What is VV Comics? When you go there, when you're reading a comic, what makes it different? What makes it the same, etc.?
Yeah.
You take this one, Dave.
Yeah. Well, Comixology, very, very popular. I think it's now merged in a way into the Amazon ecosystem. One of the major things what we really wanted to bring is that tangible digital collectibles. A lot of people talk about, well, you don't actually own it. There's no way to identify it. So what we have done in VV is add another layer where it allows you, number one, you can buy it. If you just love a day-to-day comic book, you purchase the ECL to read. And later on, you like the comic or you like the artwork, you can upgrade it. And how the upgrade really works is for $2.99, it actually minted onto a blockchain. But the beauty about that whole exercise around it is you also get to go for the chase of the covers. So quite often, each of the title that we're releasing, you have up to 5 titles from rarities from the common, which is what you see in the comic retail store. And then you have the variant covers, which will be going from rare, in this case, and secret rare. So for $2.99 extra, you get to go into a blind box, you get one of these
variant cover, which we have the odds on there. So to get that secret rare is that around 1 in 28. So once you have it, you basically now own that secret rare cover if you get that odd. And once again, you can continue to read it. And so what's really different, the element is that we also allow people later on to sell their collection. You could actually sell this X-Men number 18 on the VV marketplace. And when you do sell it, we'll send you a code to read after 3 months. It's been out. You're able to use that code to go to Marvel Unlimited. Basically, you still enjoy reading that experience.
Yeah, that's a good point, Dave. So yeah, really, you know, Marvel Unlimited is a subscription model, and the comics that you can read on there have already been on the shelves for 3 months. So yeah, primary difference, as Dave mentioned, is just the day, you know, we're out sort of day of print. And, you know, if you just want to read it, you can. But if you do want to have that opportunity or to upgrade it to a digital comic that you actually own that's limited edition, that's kind of the main driver behind the platform and what we have been doing with VV for the past couple of years.
So right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I say right now, this is right now as of South by Southwest, I know that you're having, as of this week, comics are coming out day and date, which is awesome. The back catalog, though, is one place that I saw a bunch of questions pop up because you have 300 plus, which 300 plus could be 3 million, but it's probably more in the lines of a couple of hundred. Is that something you're looking to expand?
Yes, we will always continue to do backlist comics. Like I say, I mean, it is, there's comics that I want to read that, you know, I've never been able to read. So, and you know, there's been such a popular uptake of them that we will always want to continue doing those backlist. Whereas, yeah, VV Comic is very much focused on, you know, you're following, you know, X number of series of comics. You want to read it the day they come out. That will absolutely is the focus of VV Comics. And then backlist will continue to sell through the through the VV platform.
Yeah. Well, sorry, I got to interrupt. David, your room that you are in is insane. And if you could please just point to one thing that you want to talk about a little bit, because I would love to, live in that room that you are currently in.
Can I just say, this is one tiny part of David's extensive gallery.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, recently I have been following Frank Miller. I mean, you guys brought it up with the first guest. You know, it's always been my wildest dream to own some of his artwork. And in fact, yesterday I was getting them all out. I've been collecting his work for quite some time. Here's a Wolverine cover.
Wow.
It's been published.
For anybody listening, that's the, I think, pen and ink of the recent Wolverine cover he did.
Yeah. And I got a couple Moon Knight. I was
reading
through the Moonlight from Frank.
Holy shit.
I have a quite extensive collection from him. I mean, you know, he's always been one of my favorite. You have to check out the thing.
Can I just say David hasn't stopped talking about Frank Miller for probably like the past 6 months. As he's
oh my God. Look at that.
Part of my last trip, I managed to pick up quite a few pieces that was outstanding for a number of months or years, been waiting for them to be added in the collection. So it was really good last night. I get to put things together. We live and breathe in comic and collectibles, so we're a major fan. I started my career with a retail shop, which I still own, a small chain of it here in New Zealand and a few store up in Asia.
If the shop's anything like where you are right now, it's got to be amazing.
I don't know how Pete is doing this, but he is somehow booking and on a flight to New Zealand right now while still doing this.
Yeah.
Show. It's very weird.
You're most welcome.
And one of the major issues, I found was down here, down under in New Zealand, we kind of don't get that day-to-day comic release, right? We have to ship it through the sea, the retailer has put on the shelf, and you're never going to get it at $3.99 cover price. It's always going to be that cost add-on plus. By the time you get a new release comic landed in your hand, it's about a couple months later. So, you know, this also allow us to reach that global audience. Throughout Asia, you know, you got a lot of Japanese, they love reading digital comics. So it's not something very much new. And we want to really replicate that experience for the whole Western world, and vice versa, onboarding more comic publishers, creators. You know, we, prior to this interview, I was with another writer who and publisher who's independent, and this is a platform where a lot of these independent could try us out as, you know, as a digital mean before they go to print. You know, these type of thing really have resonate with digital audience out there.
So I mean, on that note, I did want to ask you, for anybody who's watching live, we have a ton of people who are clearly big fans of Vivi in the audience. They get it. They love it. We're getting a lot of messages like this one over here says, Vivi brought me back into physical collecting. I haven't bought a comic in years until I started collecting via digital on Vivi. Now my entire family collects comic books. Yeah. We've seen a lot of things like that, which is awesome. This is not going to come as a shock to you. I think there's a lot of hesitance and concern about digital collecting. Certainly the market and the view of it, this, NFTs, et cetera, has changed a lot over the past year. I would just love to get your take on it, how you feel about that.
Yeah, what I would say is, I mean, it's no secret that NFTs went through, you know, a massive rise and a massive fall. But, you know, at the end of the day, NFT is just a technology. Like, you know, we're connecting now through the internet. And it really, I think it comes down to the application of how you use that. It is unfortunate in the NFT space, you know, in the early days that there were a number of, you know, pump and dumps, like people just putting out artwork and then pumping the price. But, you know, for us, we really saw it as an opportunity to really take the physical collecting world as we know it and as we love it and move that into a digital format. So, you know, it's not necessarily around that NFTs are a bad thing. I think that, you know, sometimes there's just bad people out there who, you know, who like to scam other people. But for us, you know, like we've always tried to remain very, very pure around, you know, making sure that, you know, we are putting collectors first. We're offering, on top of all of the NFT technology, we are offering a very much a collectible experience. I mean, even the, you know, our digital collectibles, you know, they are all beautiful 3D models. And in fact, sometimes those models are actually come from the 3D models that they use to create the physical statue. So there's a lot of authenticity there. And, you know, you can view those collectibles in augmented reality. You've got your own virtual showroom, you know, very similar to like what Dave's got behind him now. You can go into your own virtual showroom and set up all your collectibles. I mean, my office is the same. It's just shelves and shelves and shelves of collectibles. And I love doing that. Every month or two, I go through and rearrange them all. So we really wanted to make sure that we, you know, we kept that essence of collecting. So while NFTs can be good and bad, at the end of the day, it's just a technology. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really how you, you know, address the audience and create a product that that the audience likes. And I'd just like to touch on that comment that you showed on screen earlier. you know, one of the most rewarding things that David and I get when we're at Comic-Con or whatever event is that, you know, people will come up to us and they'll say, you know, as a kid or a young adult, I loved collecting. But then, you know, life happens, you have to get a job, you get a family, and you have to kind of either sell or give up. And it's just so rewarding to see that, you know, people are now able to come back to it in this sort of digital form, because, you know, it's so much fun collecting. So it's really, really, I'm glad you showed that, because I think that really just shows, you know, sort of the essence of what we're doing.
Yeah, and we are getting even more comments like that of just people who are like, yes, this actually brought me back to physical collecting. And I will say two positive things that I'll throw out there. One, as a person who has an entire line of horribly stacked comic books over there, the idea of like, oh, maybe it would make sense to do this, not where it's going to kill my children. That's one thing. And then the other thing is the idea of having the different covers. As somebody who has been iffy about this stuff, seeing that, I was like, okay, I get that. That's something that I like to do anyway, is have different covers of things. So why not make it work this way? So it definitely, I think, makes a total sense from the collecting perspective. I did want to throw one other thing that popped up in the comments out here, and not to put you on the spot, but this is another concern that I think people have with digital collecting. Nat says, would be nice to know about the energy costs associated with minting. This has been a big concern in terms of environmental impact in particular. Again, as much as you can, I would love to hear about that a little bit.
No, I'm glad you brought that up. And to be honest, I was pretty sure that that question was going to come up. I mean, look, the reality is, and if you do some research on it, like, 3-4 years ago, there were definitely some high consumption energy costs. But since then, that energy usage has dropped below 99%. And in fact, it's, you know, we can mint an entire collection for basically the same use as a laptop would use for a month. I mean, it really is quite outdated information now. The minting is very, very, very low energy consumption. In fact, there's actually a great article on our VV blog about, you know, what the actual consumption is in this day and age. And the other thing I'll say is that, you know, not to step on physical collectibles, but if you're making a physical collectible, you know, you're using plastics, you're using resin, you're shipping that, there's packaging. I mean, in my personal view, the reality is that digital is significantly more environmentally friendly overall. It is just unfortunate that energy consumption got such a big kind of hype. But yeah, the reality is now is it's very, very minimal. And as I say, you know, overall, it is a more eco-friendly option.
That's great to hear. That's awesome. And thank you for answering that. I did want to ask you, obviously, you have this very close relationship with Marvel. That's where you started. Are there thoughts of expanding to other publishers? I believe you have DC stuff as well on the collectible side. Is that something you're exploring at all, or other books?
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of publishers that we've been talking to, a lot of independents and, you know, smaller publishers, really just working out a reasonable deal split. A lot of these does come in with third party, you know, the talents, the artists themselves, the writers. You know, we are going to be the next lot of publishers coming on is recently Marvel have announced that 20th Century Fox will be part of their frontline type of comic. So there's the Planet of the Ape, there's the Alien, the Predators that will be coming out on TV. So look, Star Wars is another one. So anything, our business relationship expand to the Disney catalogs as well. So we're just working these things out. And furthermore, is contents from different parts of the world. I talked about manga will be a major one. So we're working with manga publishers to look at bringing some of the content coming up. As you probably already aware, if you go to Japan, you're in the subway. A lot of people are glued to their phones, they're reading comic, so manga. And yeah, so we're looking forward to onboard these companies onto
VR. And I think you were saying just the other day, Dave, I mean, even, you know, multi-language as well. You know, there's obviously a lot of comics that come out in different regions.
We've definitely been talking to a you know, wide range, and Vivi is definitely a place where independent writers and artists that want to try out to see if they have a demand before they physically go to print. One of our mission in the company is to foster new talents onto it, because you kind of have a major publishers that holds up to, you know, 60% of the whole entire industry. We kind of like, you know, for me, definitely as a reader, as well as a collector, you know, some of these comic book, you know, when you talk about Walking Dead from 10, 15 years ago, where they are today, you know, they they were treated as an independent at the start, and now they become, you know, a juggernaut themselves. So we're looking forward to that day to come.
Yeah, and I'll just ask one specific one that I'm sure you can't comment on necessarily, but it popped up here in the comments. David Dan, this is from Ike Sickle. Will we see Dark Horse Comics joining us on VV?
Well, we can't comment anything. The publisher, we do go into NDAs, unfortunately. There's just so much excitement around this digital transformation. We do want to keep it wrapped, but stay tuned. And Fifi is not really just about the comics. You know, we have a raft of artists, some of your favorite artists like Scotty Young, Mark Brooke, one of my other favorite artists. They have one-of-one artwork appears on Fifi. And, you know, not to surprise, a lot of these artists are now into digital art. So the minute they finish the covers, it was already originally drawn in digital. So they get, in a way, published as one-of-one on VV as part of that program.
Yeah. Wow. This is one, I think this is somebody talking about your background back there. Oop, it's disappearing. Michael Eamon says, Rick and Morty sighting, original artwork. Is there original Rick and Morty?
Wow.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like I say, Legal 9000.
Yeah. I'm into D&D, so when they did the D&D Dungeons and Dragons comic issue, I had a few things embossed for me on the covers. Yeah, love their games.
And I believe, I could be wrong about this, but I believe you have a original VV logo behind you as well.
Yep, that's first appearance.
Whoa! Yay!
9.8.
Well, awesome. This is great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying a couple of those things about the platform as well. I really appreciate it. Anything, I don't know what this would be, but anything you want to plug in particular about what's coming up or potentially might be coming up on VV Comics or otherwise?
Yeah. I mean, every week on a Wednesday, new comic day, what basically what you will see coming out in your stores, local stores. You know, join our Instagram or join our X or Twitter. Follow us and subscribe. Hit subscribe on it. We'll give you all the latest update.
Awesome. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, congratulations. So it's a really nice, smooth platform that I'm really excited to see grow. I really appreciate you taking the time. And Pete, we'll see you soon, David. He'll be
there. Yeah, exactly.
Any I'll moment be, now.
Yeah, I'll show up at your place.
Thanks, Pete.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.
Ooh, yeah. There we go. I figured out.
That's right. You brought it back for a thank you instead of cutting them off. That was really nice, actually.
First time I've done that correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Dan Crothers and David Yu, for coming on to talk about VV Comics. You can check it out right now. I'm going to get the URL correct. VV.me/comics. It's live right now with all the new Marvel that's coming out. And tomorrow there'll be new stuff as well. There you go. And folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Oh, all right.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop your question in the comments on Facebook, YouTube, X/Twitter, or Twitch. They can be about absolutely anything. They can be about comics, movies, TV shows, love advice, whatever you want.
Whoa, easy with that.
All good. Pete, before we get to that, what you drinking?
Oh, man.
Oh, and just real quick, I'll give a shout out here. Thank you, everybody. We got a bunch of great comments here from the VV community who are super active. They said, here we got like my collectibles new to your channel. Thanks, guys. Thank all of you for watching. We really appreciate it. There you go. Pete, what are you drinking?
Yeah, I just wanted to let Michael know that, you did miss Patton. That happened earlier. Knock, knock. Who's that? Landshark. That's who.
Nice.
Come on.
I really wanted to have Stree's cocktail. I did not have the ingredients. I'm sorry.
It looks unbelievable.
I made an old fashioned because that has some rye and there was rye there.
Because you're old and you believe in fashion.
I mean, look at this.
Yeah.
Look at this fit.
Come on. Three buttons.
Woo! Fashion Week, watch out.
Three buttons.
Well, let's see. Why don't we go to questions here? All in the Game says, you both watching Shogun? If so, thoughts?
Yes, I'm started Shogun. I'm only like three episodes in. It's glorious. It's just it's so elaborate. I almost just I don't want to keep watching it. The set pieces, the just kind of the set decorate. Everything is just costumes. It's just all so intricate and amazing. So yeah, I'm kind of like sparsely working my way through it, but I'm having a great time.
It is, this is a terrible way of saying this, but I have not watched it yet because it's one of those shows that I really want to concentrate on. And so far,
you want to wait till they're all there so you can kind of run through
No. Just because I know there's a lot of subtitles, I don't want to be turning away. I watch a lot.
Oh, yeah,
because
you put stuff out on background noise and
not background noise, but I definitely like do a lot of watching while I'm cooking now because I'm doing most of the cooking, nothing against my wife. And
it seems like shots fired there.
Shots fired.
It seems a little, if I was your therapist, I was like, oh, maybe we're not in the safe tree.
You didn't need to mention that on the live podcast. No, I love my wife. She does a lot. She's working really hard.
Man. It's getting weird in here. It's getting weird in here, man. Oh,
she is
man.
Working so hard. She's gone all the time, leaving me alone to deal with the kids and cook all the food and do all of the cleaning. It's fine. It's fine. She's working hard. It's fine. I want her to come home so I can watch Shogun.
Cry for help.
Anyway, my point being that every time I sit down to watch something, I'm like, ooh, I really want to watch Shogun. Ah, man, I'm going to have to jump up in the middle of this, and I don't want to do that. And so I keep putting it off.
So you're saving it when you have the time, when you can sit down.
Solid 8 hours to sit down. That'll happen.
Yeah, that's going
to
be a while. It's going to take a while.
Let's see. My youngest is 9, so I'm going to say 9 years.
9 years from today. Oh, man. Me and Shogun.
I'll set myself a reminder. Hey, Siri?
No.
Set a reminder for 9 years from now?
I wonder if we'll still be doing
Siri
the show.
Do it.
Yeah, the Siri's like, no way, bro.
I do jokes like this all the time, Siri. Come on. All right. Omer Kazajay says, any thoughts on X-Men 97 #1 comic? Yes.
Funny you should say that. We talked about it in the stack.
We sure did. We reviewed it in the Stack podcast. But just in case you missed the Stack podcast, I thought if you like the show, you like the comic. There you go. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it. Like they nailed the tone of it really well, which is a crazy
thing.
It
really feels like the show, just like a different episode. So it's impressive the way they captured the show so well.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Good time to be alive, I guess. Yeah. Nat S., in the spirit of minor threats, who are your favorite henchmen or civilian characters from comics?
Henchmen. Man. I mean, we're talking about like henchmen. I think of my favorite henchman who then went on to do a show called Barry and be like the greatest henchman of all time. You know what I mean?
NoHo Hank?
NoHo Hank, baby. I mean, come on, man. Yeah, that started in Gotham.
Zazz.
Yeah, when he was Zazz.
His greatest ass.
Oh,
that's
that,
what can I tell
that was
you
like
that?
An audition for Barry because it was like Zazz was so good. Yeah,
well, that was what kind of it was one of those things that like in a very stupid gatekeeping way annoyed me when people were like, oh my God, Anthony Carrigan is so good on Barry. He's so good. I was like, hey, I watched every season of Gotham and I knew he was great when he was. How dare you? But anyway, yeah, he's awesome. Favorite henchmen or civilian characters. Oof, I don't know. Bob Hydra Bob from Deadpool.
Oh yeah.
He's pretty good.
Yeah he is pretty
How's
good.
How's that
that's
work?
Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah.
Great. Thanks. Ooh, here we go. Casual says, what do you think of Marvel Blood Hunt Red Band Mature variant? For anybody who doesn't know what this is talking about, the issues of Marvel's Blood Hunt, which is their upcoming event where vampires take over the Marvel Universe.
Oh, okay.
Vampires are going to be released in
I thought it was just going to be a giant, like an Easter egg hunt, but for blood. You know what I mean?
Oh, I did that this past Sunday. The kids loved it.
Oh, that's great.
I left my blood everywhere. And I
it's tough to get out, man. You got to hit those stains, you know, as quick as you can, because the more it soaks in, the harder it is to get out.
Totally. It's like wine, but worse. So what was I saying? Oh, okay. So they're releasing this crossover called Blood Hunt. The issues are going to be released in a regular version and then also a red band version that has 5 extra pages drawn by, I want to say, Pepe Larraz, who, and they are more extreme, violent content. And they've been very clear that they're like, they're story pages. They are not like just splash pages of random things happening. Like, it's 5 extra pages of story that is more violent, more extreme, going to be sold in stores at the same time. Pete, you're a fan of violence. What do you think about that?
Yes, I'm a fan of violence in comic books. I think that that sounds glorious. I mean, the younger me would gladly pay more money for something like that.
Yep. I think it's fun. It's a good sales thing. I'm curious to read them and see how necessary and how actually violent it is, because I mean, granted, like I was about to say, I'm iffy about how it's not going to be like crossed level. Ooh, this is mature readers violent, but
you don't think there'll be people jerking off on bullets? Is that what you're worried about?
Yeah, I'm really worried. Pete, I'm so worried about this. No, I mean, like,
that was a fun issue of Cross, man. That's still, as soon as someone says Cross, it's the first thing that pops in my mind, because Cross got me. It changed my life. I was one person, and then I read Cross, and now I'm a different person because of that.
Yeah. No, what I was going to say is that, like, Carnage, Torn Grumpak's Carnage, was pretty extreme, and they gave that a mature reader rating. So maybe, I don't know, we'll see. Let's see. Schreckler says, what are some comic themed games, board, video, whatever, that you like or would want to see? I've mentioned this a bunch of times. I actually don't love this, so this is a bad example, but there's this series called Villainous, which is a bunch of I don't know, what is it? Tabletop games is what it's called. Mm-hmm. And it's Disney stuff. They have Marvel versions as well. It's a little overcomplicated in the Marvel version, but if you play it as a basic version, it's pretty fun. I really like the Villainous stuff. What about you, Pete?
I just want to see more Chutes and Ladders. You know what I mean? Like, really, you know, get those comic versions of those games going. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. More Q-Bert. You know what I mean? Just like,
oh, no, no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Bring back the classic games, you know?
Let me ask you a question. Whenever we say Adam or Andy Kubert, do you think of Kubert, the character?
First, yes. Yeah. I have to work harder to get to the. Yep.
Same here.
And Kubert School, I just think it's a whole school that Kubert like runs.
It teaches you how to jump up blocks.
Yep.
Nosklint says, thoughts of Marvel 97 of the series so far. I assume Nosklint means thoughts on X-Men 97. What do you think so far, Pete? Feeling good?
I mean, I am feeling good, but I'm also, the whiplash is real. I mean, they are tearing through storylines like you can't believe. So, you know, that is a little insane. But other than that, it's a ton of fun.
I'm having a great time. I'm very excited to watch the episode that comes out in a few short hours at this point as we're
dating. Oh my God, what are we doing?
Yeah, at 3 a.m. I think we'll be all right.
Oh, okay.
It's great. It's super fun. I can't wait to watch the next episode. There's not a lot of TV shows recently that I felt like that, where I'm like, yeah, bring it on. Let's do it. This is going to be injected in my veins. They put out a scene, and I guess the next episode, they're like turning into video game characters of themselves. Maybe it's a Mojo thing or something. Whatever it is.
I mean, I remember in the original cartoon, I mean, Wolverine was like part cat for a while. You know what I mean? Like, it was just a thing that they...
Let's do it all. They did Inferno in like under 10 minutes. What's going to happen the next episode? I don't know.
Just Savage Land, 2 minutes, go!
Yeah. All right. Get ready for a complete tonal shift into seriousness here. I thought this question might come up, so let's address it if that's all right. This is from Stray Beans. Comments or thoughts on the Ed Pisker situation? It's a tragedy on so many levels. So this is a very serious topic. I'm going to give a trigger warning here. I never know with trigger warnings if you need to say what they contain, but this is for a talk potentially of suicide, of sexual misconduct, etc. But to lay out the situation for you in terms of what happened here, or at least in terms of the timeline, back on, I want to say March 25th, a woman put up a bunch of screenshots of DMs she had had with Ed Pisker, who is a writer-artist who created Hip Hop Family Tree, as well as X-Men Grand Design and a bunch of other properties. He also hosted a YouTube channel called Cartoonist KFAB with Jim Rugg, another indie cartoonist type person as well. And in the screenshots, he pretty clearly was being overly sexual with her. At the time, she was 17. This continued for many years. She was not, I'm going to zip through this a little bit. You can look up the whole situation. I will say the Comics Beat in particular has a really good rundown of it from a couple of weeks back. She put out there, said, listen, Ed Pisker was preying on me. I'm not trying to do anything. This is just who he is. This is what happened. Here are the screenshots. Here are the receipts. Several other women came out and said they had similar experiences with Ed Pisker and detailed them as well. Subsequently, Pisker took his social media platforms offline. They briefly took down their YouTube channel and then brought it back up without the comments on. He otherwise did not respond to it. And in the following days, he had an exhibit. He lived in Pittsburgh, and he had an exhibit at the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust, I want to say, that was canceled. On March 30th, I believe, Jim Rugg reportedly told him that they were ending their YouTube channel together. And then on April 1st in the morning, and this is particularly where this part of the trigger warning comes in, he put up a very long, very detailed note on Facebook that blamed a bunch of people for throwing him under the bus, is the simplest way of putting it. He said that the DMs were misconstrued and the situations were misconstrued. And it ended with bye and sayonara. And then later on that day, he was declared dead. His sister posted it on Facebook. It was also confirmed via a posting on a funeral home where over the next week or so, they're going to be holding services. So you can draw your own conclusions there in terms of what happened. This has divided people very heavily online. There's been an enormous amount of discussion about it. I will say that the Comics Gator community in particular has taken to it and said, see, this is what happens when you bully somebody online, and used it that way. Other people have been calling it a tragedy. Other people have been framing it in a million different ways. This is a complicated topic. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've been thinking about how to respond to this or react to this. It is certainly not my responsibility. I don't think we ever interviewed Ed Pisker, so I don't know that I ever met him personally or have a stake in this, but here's what I will say about it, and I hope this doesn't strike anybody the wrong way. I think it comes off that Ed Pisker essentially wanted to burn the world down on the way out. These women presented concerns. They were upset about things that he had done. He responded by seemingly, and I think you can draw the dots there, seemingly by dying by suicide. That was his decision. That is not connected to what he did to these women. It is not their fault. It is not anybody's fault. It was Ed Pisker's decision to do that. There are repercussions for that. My heart goes out to his family and friends. It is a tragedy whenever anybody dies that way. It is awful, but it is not the victim's fault. It is not any of the other creators or people that he named in the notes' fault. It is nobody's fault except for his own. There are other options there. I will mention, if you live in the United States, I believe if you are having thoughts of suicide or if there is somebody you know who is having thoughts of suicide. I believe the number is 988. I'll look that up before we get off here to make sure that's actually correct. But the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There are options. There are other ways to go. It is, you know, something that I posted on one of the social media networks afterwards. It's like, it's much harder to apologize for something and learn from your mistakes and prove people wrong that way. But I thought about it more, and I don't think it is. I think something that I have learned over the course of my life is if you screw up, if you make a mistake, no matter how bad it is, owning up to it immediately allows you to move on and fix either those things in yourself or with other people. There are things that happen that certainly in this case can destroy a person's career, can wreck a person's life, can wreck their friendships, can wreck their family. But if you take your own life, there is no way of moving forward or making that positive or repairing that in any way when there always is. I know that's not the perfect way of saying it, but again, I've been thinking about this quite a bit over the past couple of days. I don't think there's an easy answer there, but to answer your question, Stray Beans, that's my takeaway there. Pete, I know I've been monologuing for a while. I don't know how much of this was news. I don't know how much you want
to
add.
But... yeah, a lot of it was news to me. That's a tough situation. I would like to just say, though, that, you know, if things are getting bad for you and things aren't making sense, if you're having suicidal thoughts, if you feel like you've made some kind of mistake that you can't go back from, try talking to people first. Please try, please, for not only your sake, for other people's sake. We all lean on each other. We all need each other. This is not an easy life. But when you make a decision like that, you can't come back from it. And, you don't know what happens after you're gone. So, I would just like to, you know, I mean, since we're getting serious, you know, there's a lot of people going through different things in different times in their life. So, you know, if you think it's, if it's bad, you know, please, try.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And sometimes it feels like you can't. If you are a friend, that's why the National Suicide Prevention Hotline emphasizes if somebody is feeling this, you can call as well. You can get resources. I just checked. It is 988 in the United States.
Yeah, they can also help you help a friend, you know, if it's...
Yes.
Yeah.
But it is a decision one person makes that impacts many other people. And now somehow we're going to have to turn back to floofy comic book subjects, which is tough. Certainly we're happy to talk about, not happy, we will talk about this more if people want to or if they have any thoughts, because it's a serious thing. But why don't we go to something a little lighter, if that's okay, Pete?
Yeah, with trivia?
We have other questions here.
Oh, okay.
Or we could just go right into trivia.
Let's
do a question or two to do like a little odd wrap. Okay.
I mean, because the way trivia starts, it's, you know.
Yeah, it's a Goofmatron 3000. This is from Mike Collectibles, says, which new release Marvel comic are you most looking forward to reading? I don't know how we should have just ended the show there.
just end the show.
I guess so. I don't know.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, go for it.
Deadpool number one that's coming out tomorrow. Oh, that's the one I'm looking forward to. That's one of the things that, I really appreciate about Deadpool is he goes through a lot of crazy stuff, but he also, he talks about stuff, even if it's to inanimate objects. He lets people know what he's going through, which is nice. Yeah.
Jed McKay has a lot of titles that are coming out. I'm kind of looking forward to Vengeance of the Moon Knight, and that's been an interesting mystery series. And
yeah, the last page reveal of that was really fun. I heard
spoilers. All right. Mahalo Joe says, what are your genuine thoughts on having ownership of digital comics and using them in other interoperable platforms, perhaps on AR, VR devices like Apple Vision? I don't have a specific opinion on using them on other platforms like Apple Vision. In all honesty, like, I think our guest did a very nice job of explaining it. And I'm being honest when I say, like, as a comic collector, looking at the VV platform and being like, we have these different variants and they get more rare as they go and you can randomly get them, was kind of the first time I really got anything about this whole NFT thing at all. I'm still not totally into it, but like, I've done collectible trading card AR games. I play Pokemon Go. So I understand being like, ooh, you found a shiny Pokemon. Awesome. Now I feel good. So I get that, but I think ultimately, like, you don't actually own digital stuff. It's not physical.
You own it digitally. Well, I'm all into it.
Like,
you know what I mean? Like, how if I put on my VR glasses and sit in my cool digital apartment and pick out a comic that I've bought and read it, I mean, that's kind of...
Okay, Lawnmower Man.
Yeah, I'm living my lawnmower lifestyle, okay? So don't fucking...
Here's what I'd say. It's like, over the course of the show, I think, Pete, I've been way more into, like, yes, switch everything over to digital, let go.
What? One thing I would, if I can just back up the truck for a sec, when we're talking about the Vive of it all, which is great, is, you know, there's comics that are sold out, you know, and stuff like that. So being able to kind of read those online is huge. Then also the collector in me really got the kind of, when they were talking about different variants and stuff like that, I was like, oh, that would be cool to own, you know? Mm-hmm. So I did get the kind of itch that you do get from collecting, which I think is... where the future is going a little bit. So I do think that having that kind of platform and doing that kind of stuff is a cool thing, you know?
Yeah. And like I said, from playing games and other things, I get it. I get the thrill of digital collecting, and seeing it in this format with the comic books was the first time I saw it off of a game. But I do think unless you physically own something, you don't, somebody else could take it away at a moment's notice. Granted, somebody could walk into your house and steal things at the same time, but there you go. I don't know, man. I think we did enough questions there. We could probably go to trivia, right?
All right. I just would like to also point out that, like, you know, you played Pokemon Go, but you also had a problem with it. You know what I mean? Because, like, I almost saw you walking into traffic a couple times when you were playing. You know what I mean? So I was pretty worried about you walking around the city. Because you were more concerned about what was virtually happening on your phone versus what was actually happening in real life. You know what
well,
I mean?
Here's the thing. If I die, I have a thing in my will that all of my virtual Pokemon on Pokemon Go are buried with me. So it's all right. It's honestly fine. If that.
I mean, the first time you came to my apartment, I was like, oh, did you see that cool park that they just put in? And you were like, what park? You know what I mean? You missed a whole park. You walked past a whole park. You know what I mean? Because you were in the go.
There you go. Awesome. Why don't we move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete the Page.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 online, because if you had $25, you'd want to go buy some comic books. Midtown Comics Online. So yeah, all we need is a brave volunteer for some fun trivia.
Yeah, super easy, and like Pete said, you get $25 pretty much guaranteed. If we have any of our new viewers from the VV fandom want to play. Ooh, David Quinley says, I'll do it.
All right, David.
Okay,
here we go. Today's trivia is on comic book writers and artists, and a small nod to the legend Chance Perdomo, R.I.P.
Oh,
yeah, dude. You want to talk about... Yeah, oh, dude, that hurt. I mean, I don't... We got to talk about what's going to happen moving forward. I mean, yeah,
I'm not even there yet. I'm just so sad.
Shocked. I thought... I was like, where's the people saying this is an April Fool's thing? Like, because I was like... I fell for a couple things online, and then I was like, come on. And then to find out it was real was really fucking heartbreaking. Anyways. All right. Okay.
David, drop your answers in the comments. Pete, take it away.
Okay, here. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. This amazing Image comic was a hit with us, as well as many others. It's called Made in Korea. Who wrote it? Is it A, Jeremy Holt? B, tell Max we need more out of him. C, Max Moore.
Oh, interesting. I forgot about that series.
How dare you? It was glorious. No, it was, that was one of your really favorites.
Good. Yeah, Made in Korea. So dark. So interesting. Yeah. Good callback. Callback? Yeah. Is it a callback when you mention something that happened previously in my life?
Yeah, I guess so. Or is that a memory? All right.
It's a memory.
I'm sure he said A. Okay. Question number two.
Yep.
This next writer, you might know from Magicians, amazing book and TV show, as well as Lumberjanes. Who is it? Is it A, Lila Sturges? B, what's the name of that dude who loves when it's close to the weekend? C, Larry Friday.
Oh, you went so quickly on the C, I actually missed that you had finished it up. Should we assume that David said A? Probably, since that's the only actual answer.
That's the only actual answer for these. So, yeah, I'm also going to assume it. We'll go on with the next one. Here we go. Last one. This artist and writer worked on the cartoon Tell No Tales and then the graphic novel Real Hero Shit. Who is it? Is it A, Kendra Wells? Mm-hmm. B, tell Bill to stop taking all the free shit. C, William Samples.
Ooh. So I will say David did say an A in the comments here.
Yeah, great. So he nailed it.
Oh, he got it?
Yeah, he got it.
Amazing. Congratulations, David. You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email.
Omar.
We'll get that out to you. But Pete, what is the secret movie or TV show you were referencing here?
Well, you know, of course I had to talk about one of our favorites. I'm talking about the 2018 to 2020 glorious TV show, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
There you go. Rip Chancellor Perdomo. So sad.
I mean, I was only, I was just getting to spend time with you. I was just getting to know the glory that is you, Chance.
It was all awful, awful the news. Yeah. Another great transition from us to talk about what new comic books are coming out this week. Pete, I know you already said Deadpool number one. Anything else you're looking forward
to? I did say that. I'm also looking forward to Batman number 146, as well as the sensational She-Hulk number seven.
Oh, yeah. Good pick. Best romance book on the stands.
Oh, my God, dude.
I'll give a shout out to our guests. Minor Threats, The Fastest Way Down is number one, is coming out from Dark Horse. So definitely check that out. A bunch of stuff that I'm really excited about. The Immortal Thor number 9 is kicking off this weird metatextual thing where later on in the month they're going to have the Roxanne Thor, which is like amped up, muscly Thor.
I felt really picked on in that comic.
Ooh, we'll talk more about that. Yeah. And also I'm very curious to check out the first three titles from Ghost Machine, the new co-op printing through Image Comics. They've got Geiger number one, Red Coat number one, and Rook Exodus number one.
You're teasing our Jeff Johns block.
Our Johns block.
Yeah, Johns block that's coming out tomorrow.
Yes. But
the block of Johns.
Yeah, it's the first three official titles from Ghost Machine, so very curious to check those out. And lots more stuff coming out. And
Which do you think is scarier, the Ghost or the Machine?
Oh, great question. Let's get into that on the Stack. Which posts Wednesday, 9 a.m. in the Stack podcast feed and in the Comic Book Club feed.
Does it?
Couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Patton Oswalt, Jordan Bloom, and Scott Hepburn for coming out to talk about Minor Threats. Alex Pactadol for checking out, talking about Cult of the Lamb. And Dan Crothers and David Yu for talking about Vivi. Check all that out. Next week, we're going to have another great show with Tessa Holes here to talk about Feeding Ghosts. And Alex Schumacher is going to be on the show to talk about the effects of pickled herring. A couple of other Excuse me, things to plug. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, currently recapping X-Men 97. Podvincible, our Invincible podcast, recapping Invincible. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram or TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night!
Take care of yourself out there. Hi, Hollywood Justin! Stray Bullet, Patton Oswalt loves you.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.